Hello, friends. This is Mark Gladman, also known as Brother Frederick James, your friendly neighborhood monk in docs, welcoming you to Monk on the Mic, the Monk in Docs podcast. And this is episode 12, Jump for Joy. Before we jump into that, though, pardon the pun, just a very quick thank you to all of those people who concluded Lent with me in that special Zoom call that we did at the end of Lent, where we talked about the I Am, which we did right the way through Lent in the Lenten study, but specifically talked about the I Am in the context of Holy Saturday. And that was a really, really great reflective call to do just before Good Friday for me, and for most of the people who were there. It was the Wednesday before Maundy Thursday, at the start of Easter. So just a thank you to everyone who came. It was lovely to meet you and see you face to face, all these people that have been gathering around the table, now starting to get to know many of you in this way. And for those of you who missed the call or weren't able to be there, that Zoom call was recorded, and it is now up in the Lenten study, which is still on the table, still there at monkindocs.podia.com. And it's an epilogue to the Lenten study, and there is a transcript and an audio recording of the teaching that I gave there on the I Am statements in the context of Holy Saturday. So please go and take a look at that. Also, over the Easter weekend, it seems that there were a whole bunch of people who have come on board as financial supporters of the work at the table, and I just want to say thank you so much to those people for coming on board. Thank you for your support of what I'm doing there. And the people who financially help support the table enabled even to make most of what's at the table for free and available to anybody. And that's the heart of the table. Everybody's welcome at the table. The table is a space for all people, no matter where you're from or who you are or what you believe or what your orientation or any other barriers that are put in the way. I believe that the table of God is a table for everybody, and that's why I called the website The Table. And there, if those of you who've never been, you'll find teaching, you'll find courses, you'll find audios, you'll find how-tos, you'll find contemplation and Lectio Divina audios, you'll find teaching on how to do these things and how to read the Bible well and how to engage with God and all this stuff's up there. Also, the daily post that I do on Instagram, it goes up there. The podcast goes up there. It's kind of like a one-stop shop for everything that I've ever done and will continue to do. And of course, the table will continue to be populated with all that stuff. And if you are a financial supporter of the table, every single thing at the table is absolutely free. If you're unable to do that, that's okay. Most of the stuff at the table is free. Obviously, there's some things that aren't necessarily possible to do that with. And so, but the idea is that most of the things I put there to support people and to help them grow in their spiritual journey are available. So all those people who support and have now newly come on board to support, thank you so much for that. Just some great things coming up at the table in the next couple of weeks. And also, and I've mentioned this a couple of podcasts ago, but some great interviews that I've been doing over the last few weeks, and I've got booked in for the next few weeks as well, with guests that I know you're going to absolutely love. And so keep an eye out for those things as well. And if you go to the table, you can subscribe. And every time something new is released or I'm doing something that I'm inviting subscribers to, you'll get an email before anybody else. So if you just want to keep tabs on what I'm doing and the work that I'm doing and have access to the things, particularly because some of them are limited, then jump on there, subscribe, and you'll get those emails and you'll be able to find out what's going on. So thank you so much, and I hope everybody had a wonderful, blessed Easter. Now, jump for joy. What I'd like you to do as we get started today is, I wonder if it's safe for you to do so, because I know some of you are driving as you're listening to this, but if it's safe for you to do so, just close your eyes for a moment. If it's not, just you can still do this, but please don't close your eyes. I want you to think for a moment, what is the thing or the things that bring you joy? What are the things around you, the things that you might do, the things that you might have, the things that you might experience that you believe bring you great joy? And I want you to picture that thing. Don't just think of it, just actually picture it and picture yourself doing it. And just sit with that for a moment and feel those feelings of joy that you experience in that moment. Hold on to it just for a second. And now what I'd like you to do is just, still holding on to it, just push it down just a little bit. And we're going to have a bit of a chat and we're going to come back to that thing towards the end. So just keep that there. But make sure you have that. We'll come back to it in just a sec. Now, we're going to take a bit of a journey through the Bible right now. And we're going to finish at the beginning. So we're going to actually finish in Genesis. And we're going to get there via Paul's letter to the church in Rome, the Romans church, Book of Romans. But we're going to start in this very strange and unusual book that we have in the Hebrew Scriptures called Ecclesiastes. Its real Hebrew name is Kohelet. And the reason why we have the title Ecclesiastes is because when the Hebrew Scriptures were first translated into Greek, the people who translated it saw this word Kohelet and basically took the root of that word, which means to assemble, and basically put it together as, well, this is a book about the assembling. This is Ecclesiastes. I mean, that's the word we use, for example, things churchy. In the West, we talk about ecclesiastical things. That word means the gathering of the people, and it's the word that, you know, we later in English call church, that we have there. And so we have this book, Kohelet, and the thing is, we really don't know who this Kohelet is, this gatherer of people, this assembler of people. We know that this Kohelet is called the son of David, and that might mean that he comes from the Davidic line. Because of this, most people, both in Jewish and Christian tradition, have taken it to mean that it talks about Solomon. And this is probably because also in the text, there's some stuff that could be taken as autobiographical. And the writer talks about, you know, building kingdoms and having great wealth and, you know, ruling over this and that and the other. And a lot of people go on, oh, well, this is probably a Solomon. But we don't know that for sure. And so Robert Alter, who, by the way, Robert Alter did a translation of the Hebrew Scriptures. And it's absolutely amazing. It was a 25-year project for Robert Alter, who, if you don't know who Robert Alter is, he's one of the world's current foremost experts on Hebrew translation, and has written some wonderful books about the translation of the Hebrew text and how translation works and what translators do. And if you want a bit of a snapshot of that, you can, I really encourage you to listen to the Bible for Normal People podcast, which is the podcast that is hosted by Peter Enns, Dr. Peter Enns, who, if you've done or if you are doing the Finding Light course in the table, you'll know that Peter Enns is someone who I've drawn on for a couple of the lessons there. And Peter did this great conversation interview with Robert Alter about how he translated the Hebrew Scriptures and what translation is, and it's just stunning. And you'll get a really good grasp on what it takes to translate a text if you listen to that, and I encourage you to do so. It would be really good. And if, as I said, if you want to do a whole bunch of stuff about this in lots of different ways, then there's a course in the table called Finding Light, where I basically teach different ways of reading different parts of the text and how to draw light, this deeper light out of the text, Because a lot of people said, hey, we love what you write about when you talk about the languages and the Greek words and this, that, and some of the context, and how do you do that? And so this course I'm writing is basically holding each other's hands and walking through reading together and learning how to do that together. So you can have a look at that there on the table if you choose to as well. So we've got this book, Ecclesiastes, written by this person who is known in the text as Qohelet. And it's also a weird book because a lot of scholars are confused as to why it was included in the canon of Hebrew scripture. Because, frankly, according to the scholars, it really doesn't continue that whole theme or the arc. It doesn't take place anywhere in the storyline. And there are some of the things and concepts that it talks about, particularly in terms of who and what God is and how God relates to people, that almost throw you off what's been emerging in the text in the arc of scripture. So it's a really interesting book to have there, but it's really well known because this writer called Qohelet, that we're going to call Qohelet, he seems to have this real grasp on life, but it's not in the way that we would expect to see it. Because very famously, in the very first chapter of this book that Qohelet writes, there's a brief introduction by someone who's a third party, possibly an editor, possibly a commentator, and we'll talk about that in a second. But there's a very brief commentary introducing it. And the very first words, though, of Qohelet in this book, which then continues for the next 214 verses, begins with these beautiful words of encouragement, these very famous words of encouragement. They go like this: meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, or Qohelet, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless, right? How encouraging is that? You're probably wondering where is this guy going? Both me and Qohelet, perhaps. Now that word that's translated as meaningless in the version that I just read to you, the English version I read to you, is an important word, the actual Hebrew word, when we think about joy. The Hebrew word that's used here is hevel, and it actually can be translated into English in a number of ways. The King James Version, very famously, probably the most famous version of this verse, and very poetically, uses the term vanity. And so it starts with vanity, vanity, everything is vanity, which is a very 17th century way of saying that it lacks value. It's not saying, oh, look at me, self-admiration, that sort of vein, like you're so vain, I bet you think the song's about you. But it's talking about vain as in it lacks value. Now, so vanity is used in the King James. The text I used was meaningless. Some other versions have the word futility. Some say pointless. There are other texts that use the word useless. And another one that I've seen uses absurdity. The problem, according to Robert Alter, when you are looking at all of these translations of this Hebrew word hevel, is that they're technically all correct. The problem isn't that they're all correct and that they're used. The problem is if you use one of them and sort of push the others out of the way, you really don't capture the fullness of the word. You really need to embrace all of these things to get it. So, for example, if you decide as a translator, I'm going to use meaningless, that's correct. But in doing so, you kind of miss the full scope of what the word really means. So, in essence, in this first verse, if you wanted to really get to what Robert Alter is saying here, Qohelet is basically writing vain, meaningless, absurd, pointless, useless, and futile. Vain, meaningless, pointless, absurd, useless, and futile. Utterly vain, meaningless, absurd, pointless, useless, and futile. Everything is vain, meaningless, absurd, pointless, useless, and futile. All right, you get the deal? But back to this word hevel just for a second, because you need to know that hevel is a metaphor of sorts. And to use word for word, I'm just going to quote here Robert Alter in the introduction to his translation of this text. He says this, he says, Hevel probably indicates the flimsy vapor that is exhaled in breathing, invisible except on a cold winter day, and in any case, immediately dissipating into the air. So the image that you get when you think about this word Hevel is kind of the image you get, you know, when it's a really cold day, which it literally has got here in my country home yesterday and today as I'm recording this, we've got a cold snap. And I'm wearing a hoodie today, and I wore a hoodie yesterday. And before that, we were in shorts and t-shirts. And yesterday morning, I got up early to come into my office and pray, and I breathed out, and I saw that fog, mist, vapor. You know, when you're a kid and it's really cold, and you go outside and you're all dragons, you're breathing out, and you've got this steam coming out of your mouth, and you pretend to be a dragon. What this word Hevel is talking about is kind of that. Where you breathe out and you see that mist, but then all of a sudden, snap, and it's gone. It just vanishes into thin air. You watch the steam or the vapor come out, and then it condenses in the air and then conforms to the cold, and it is gone. It vanishes. And so this is what Hevel is. And so Alter suggests that to vanity, meaningless, absurd, pointless, useless, and futile, you could also add insubstantial, ephemeral, elusive. And in fact, in his translation, Robert Alter uses the phrase merest breath. So he's got verse 2 of Ecclesiastes 1. He's got Qohelet saying, merest breath, said Qohelet, merest breath, all is mere breath. So to sum up then, Qohelet is saying that everything that he has experienced, seen and researched, and we'll talk about these things in a second, it is all vain, meaningless, absurd, pointless, useless, futile, vaporous, insubstantial, ephemeral and elusive. Everything is mere breath. Welcome to our podcast about joy, right? So, why did he start here, you're saying? Stay with me. What happens next in Ecclesiastes? For 214 more verses, this Qohelet goes on to talk about how they went looking for some meaning in life. They're looking for the point of it all. And this Qohelet does so in some very concrete and uses some very physical terms. And after the introduction, where they go on to qualify why certain things are meaningless, they then go on to talk about those things specifically. And there's this kind of cycle where Qohelet keeps coming back around to this meaningless, meaningless, vanity, absurd, whatever it is that they are. And he meanders back and forth, often repeats himself, but always comes back to that context of these things that he's talking about being meaningless. And the themes that he covers are things like the pleasures of life, the work that we do, the repetitive cycle of time and the seasons. He talks about friendships and relationships, talks about advancement, talks about riches, talks about having resources, talks about knowledge. All of this and more, he keeps talking about, and how he's experienced this and tried this and had times in his life where this has happened and so on, and always comes back around to it all being meaningless, 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 until he gets to the very last bit where he says, the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to the God who made it. Full stop. Again, welcome to our podcast about joy. So here you have this book, that seems dedicated to this journey of this meaninglessness where everything seems to happen and it cycles around and does it again and it's all meaningless. There's nothing new under the sun. This happens, that happens. It's there, it's gone, it's vaporous, it's, and then it disappears. And then at the end, you will die, your body will turn to dust, your spirit will return to God, and it's done. And after that, and this is why I was talking before about this editor or this commentator that seems to participate in this book, in this text, you have this commentator who comes back at the very end and sums it up. And most scholars, it seem to think that this commentator is saying what they're saying because they want to try and bring into a context everything that this Qohelet is saying without it finishing on what seems to be a very depressive end. And so at the very end, this commentator, this editor basically says, let's sum up by saying this, here is the last word, all being heard, fear God, keep God's commandments, for that is all humankind. Since every deed will God bring to judgment, for every hidden act, be it good or evil. That's pretty much it. Fear God, keep his commandments. So he's trying to bring this context in that even though all this is supposedly meaningless, according to Qohelet, at the end of the day, continue to follow after God. And so remember Qohelet's saying that you've got these things that happen in life, but it's all highs but then lows, and it just keeps cycling around and it's all meaningless. For a second, I want you to just bring back to your mind that thing that you thought about earlier when I said to you, can you think of something that brings you joy? Because what our friend Qohelet would want you to know, if you read the text of Ecclesiastes, is that the thing that brings you joy is probably, in the larger scheme of things, actually vain, meaningless, absurd, pointless, useless, futile, vaporous, insubstantial, ephemeral, and elusive. It is mere breath. And I know right now some of you are beginning to push back on that, going, hey, whoa, 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 hold on. You don't know what it is that I thought about. The thing I thought about isn't vain and meaningless or mere breath or vapor, isn't it? And I know this is something that might be hard to get for a moment, but I just ask you to bear with me as we break this down, because what I want you to see, I hope, is that while I do believe those things bring you joy, what I'm going to get you to start to see, I hope, is that those things don't bring you joy necessarily for the reason that you think they do, which will help you understand why you can still experience the joy of those things even when they've gone. Because if you don't understand this, then your focus is going to be on the thing that brings you joy, not on the actual source that brings you joy through the thing. Now, to understand what I'm saying here, I want to jump into Paul. In Romans chapter 8, in verse 6, we read these words. Paul writes, to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the spirit is life and peace. Now, a couple of things. First of all, to set the mind on. When Paul is using that phrase, what he's talking about is the motivation from which you are living from. And in this verse, he's trying to get us to see that when we live in a way that finds its purpose and motivations and meaning in the things that don't really matter, then what we're going to do is miss out on the real life and the real peace that comes from the real source of life and peace, because real life and real peace can't be found in the things that don't really matter. And so he's talking about here, first of all, he says, to set your mind on the things of the flesh, or on the flesh, is death. And when we're talking about flesh here, let's be very careful. So many people have taken this to mean things of a sexual nature, or things simply of a physical nature. I don't believe that's what he's talking about. I don't believe Paul is saying here that the physical things around us are wrong or bad. And I certainly don't think that Paul is saying here that sex and sexuality is bad, not at all. And I think this misunderstanding of the word the flesh, particularly in the very early days of Christianity, and people taking this text and starting to read it and seeing this word flesh and thinking it was all about sexual sin or some sort of physicality of things, and all of a sudden those things became wrong and sinful, which created a duality in which now the things of the physical realm, they don't matter as much as the things of the spiritual realm. And that, I don't think that anything could be further from the truth. I don't think that there is anything wrong with the physical realm or what we see or the tangible stuff of life. And I certainly don't believe that there is a duality in this, because the spirit, if you want to call it the spirit realm and the physical realm, I don't believe are separated. And I don't believe they can be separated, because if we believe that the creative force and energy of the universe, which is God, has its substance and it is inherent in all things and holds all things together and helps all things continue to exist, then you can't separate the two. So I don't believe that's what Paul is doing here. I believe, though, what he's talking about when he's talking about this things of the flesh is more the things, and when I use the word things, I'm separating, I'm not saying the physical, but the concept even, the idea. The things that are, though, that are mean, vain, meaningless, absurd, pointless, useless, futile, vaporous, insubstantial, ephemeral, and elusive. The things that are mere breath. Paul is saying, don't live from those things or for those things. Don't seek to find in those things the source of life. However, verse 6 again, to set your mind or to live from the things of the Spirit, that is, the things that are a part of who and what this reality truly is. Those are the things that bring us life and peace. Paul then goes on to say in verse 9, and this is the interesting part, but you are not in the flesh, you are in the Spirit, since the Spirit of God dwells in you. And so this is a reminder from Paul that you don't need to live out of the things of the flesh, the things that are meaningless, the things that are ephemeral. You don't need to live out of those things, the things that are elusive, because you've got God's Spirit in you. And because you have God's Spirit in you, you are Spirit, and you can live out of that Spirit, live out of those things, and find the joy and the source of life and so on within the context of those things. Because it's in those things that you will find the reality and the source of all that's life. Which brings us to Genesis, because it's in Genesis that we get to see the very first appearance of a Hebrew word that's really important. And this Hebrew word is ruach, R-U-A-C-H, if you're writing it in Roman, ruach. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 2 reads, now the earth was formless and empty, darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Ruach Elohim, was hovering over the waters. Now, this Ruach Elohim is mostly translated as God's Spirit. So if you're reading it in a text, an English text in front of you now, you'd read that the Spirit of God or God's Spirit was hovering over the waters. And this is pretty much the very first picture that we have of God in the Bible. We see God in verse 2 of the creation story at the very beginning as a spirit of some kind hovering over the waters at the start of creation. That word hovering, by the way, can also be translated as vibrating. So there's this sense of energy to this spirit. All right. And so you can think of this as the energy, the life source, the power, the animating force, the dynamic that's going to be behind all of the creation that's about to happen. But what's really interesting is that this word ruach also means wind and breath. And although sometimes another Hebrew term for breath is used, and that term is nishmat, this breath of God's Spirit was thought of as the thing that was the energy, the life source, the power, and the dynamic that animated all living things in the universe as they were created, including us. Here's some examples from the Hebrew scriptures. In Genesis chapter 2, we read that God's nishmat is what is blown into the first human's nostrils, this lump of wet dirt, and this God blows into the nostrils, this breath, this nishmat, and it becomes a living being. This breath literally animates this lump of wet dirt, and it becomes human. In Isaiah chapter 42, Isaiah identifies God's nishmat as the thing that gives people life. In Job chapter 27, Job speaks of the Ruach Elohim, that breath of God, this Spirit of God, as being in his nostrils and the very thing that keeps him alive. And in Ezekiel 37, you remember Ezekiel has this vision of the Valley of Dry Bones coming to life, and it is the Ruach that is written there that God will put into the dry bones and cause them to live. And I say all of this to say that this Ruach, this wind, spirit, breath of God, this energy, the life source, the power, the animating force or dynamic that gives you and me life has an opposite. And the opposite of Ruach is, you ready? It's Hevel. Right. Remember Hevel? The vaporous, meaningless, futile, and it's gone. Well, the opposite of that is Ruach, the life-giving, animating life source and breath of God that fills our very being. Wow. Okay. So, the vaporous breath that Qohelet uses as a metaphor for the things that most people seem to find their substance and meaning in are literally meaningless because they are the complete opposite of the life-giving breath of God that fills us. And when you start to think of it like this, you start to see that while the things that bring us joy bring us joy, they don't bring us joy for the reason we think they bring us joy. Because you remember at the start I said, think of the thing that brings you joy. Where do you find joy? And if you bring to mind the thing or some of the things that you thought about earlier, I bet you that it's possible that a lot of them, if not all of them, could disappear from your life tomorrow. And I don't say that to be callous or horrible or cruel. I say that because that is a reality of the world we live in. If you find great joy in your partner, they could be gone tomorrow. Your children could be gone tomorrow. Your house gone tomorrow. Your car, your motorcycle, the nature walks that you take, the places where you've been, they could be gone tomorrow. I love walking in certain parts of bushland, but what if a bushfire rips through there? What I experience there usually will be gone. See, a lot of the things that in which we find our joy are literally vaporous. They're here today and gone tomorrow. So the question is, where do we truly find our joy? Well, let me share a couple of the things that I find joy in with you and show you how I have come to understand where that joy comes from. And hopefully that will help you see where your joy truly comes from. So, for instance, I find a great deal of joy in the time that I spend with my spouse. We have great fun together. We have very common and dovetailing interests, and we enjoy spending time with each other. We're literally great friends, and we love doing that stuff together. But the question is do I find joy from my spouse per se, from my partner, or do I find joy in the sharing of the love between each other, which also reminds us of the Ruach Elohim that surrounds us both and fills us both from within with love as well? Is that breath of life of God's Spirit truly the thing that brings me joy, even the joy that I feel when I'm spending time with my partner? Or what about when I'm spending time with my kids? Again, is it this Ruach Elohim, this God breath of the Spirit within me, that the life and the freedom and joy that I have when I'm spending time hanging out with my kids? My kids are both adults now, but I love spending time with them. They're both a bit like me, a little bit childish on the side, and so we have a lot of fun when we're together. But that joy that I feel when I'm spending time with them, does it actually come from them, or is it more, again, the sense of love and the fun and the freedom that we feel when we're with each other that comes from God's life-giving Spirit? Or I love hanging out with our dogs. You've heard me talk about Stanley and Saxon here on the show before, and particularly Stanley, our miniature Dachshund puppy, who's just over a year old now, just still goes nuts with things. And Saxon is really old, trying to keep up. They make us laugh and bring us great joy, but at the end of the day, is it them per se, or is it the fact that we are watching these two beings that are also animated by this presence of God in and around them that brings us that great joy? I said I like spending time in nature, but is it the nature per se, or is it the way in which we realize how close we are to God when we seem to get out and spend time in nature? I love spending time out on my motorcycle, and I've often said that one of the things I love about my motorcycle is that there's only room for two people inside my helmet. That's me and God. So is it actually being out on the bike that's the great joy, or is it that proximity to God I feel that brings me the joy? And folks, just like you, I've experienced ups and downs. I lost a parent when I was relatively young. Had to deal with bringing up two kids who both had their issues as they were brought up. I've had to go through a marriage breakup and a divorce. I had a crisis of faith thrown in there for good work, good addition. I've even had an experience where I was in an accident and literally came close to death. But what I realized is that in all of those things, I have never been far from joy. And I really want you to capture that. And I wasn't far from joy because joy never left me, because deep down I knew that somehow God's Spirit, that Ruach Elohim, was still there coursing through my body. And that in which we learn to live from the things of the Spirit is the thing that brings us joy. I have a real belief that sighing is something that God has given us to remind us that even when we're hurt, depressed, in pain, sad, grieving, and so on, that a big, deep breath reminds us that the breath of God can still bring us life in the midst of all of those things. And I think that's why in Psalm 23, verse 4, the psalmist says that they can walk through the darkest of valleys and will fear no evil. Why? Because God is still with me. Because joy doesn't come from the thing or the people or the circumstances. You experience that joy with that thing and with those people and in those circumstances. But the joy that you're experiencing in all those things comes from God. And this is why we can say that while the things around us will be vaporous, we can still find joy with them. Doesn't mean that I don't find joy in spending time with my wife. It's just that the source of joy isn't her per se. It's the experience of God together that we have that brings us that joy. Which also means that in the event that I or she pass away, that neither of us should fear not experiencing that joy anymore, because even the memory of those times together will trigger joy, because it's not reliant on her being there or me being there with her that to bring the joy. The joy, the source of the joy is God, right? And so even the memories of those times can bring great joy, and joy never leaves us because God never leaves us. Humor me for a moment. Close your eyes. And I want you to think of the thing that you're dealing with right now that's bringing you grief or hurt or pain, or the last thing if you're not experiencing anything like that at the moment. And as you hold that thing in your mind, I want you to take a really deep, slow breath in and out. And again, in and out. And again. Feel that. And even give a big sigh. Feel that. That very breath, that's God's life force, love, spirit that lives in you and gives you life. Our dear Colette might have found everything to be vain, meaningless, pointless, absurd, useless, futile, vaporous, insubstantial, ephemeral, elusive, and mere breath. But what he might have forgotten was this hevel, this vapor, this, and it's gone, is countered with its opposite. And that is the Ruach Elohim, in whom Paul said we live and move and have our being, of whom Jesus said was here and among us and around us and with us and within us and at hand and now, and of whom the scripture tells us brings us life. And in that life is true joy. And here is the beautiful thing, my friends. You don't jump for joy because joy is elusive and you have to jump in order to reach it. You jump for joy because joy moves you from within and you cannot help but be moved and to jump. There is nothing out there that will bring you joy. There are things out there that might help you experience joy, and there are things out there that, yes, will bring happiness, but true joy comes when you experience the Ruach Elohim, that breath of life, the opposite of the vapor that is here and gone. This joy doesn't disappear. This joy doesn't go away. This joy is there in that spirit of shared love and peace and hope that we link with one another. Joy will always bubble up from that Ruach Elohim because that Spirit of God is in you. So jump for joy, because joy is literally alive in the very breath that you breathe right now. And every time you experience that joy, when you're with your partner, with your dog, with your favorite book, in the bush, riding your motorcycle, out on your canoe, watching the sunrise, remember that the joy doesn't come from the thing, because the thing could be gone tomorrow. But the joy comes from God. And as you share that connection with that thing or with that person, remember that God's Spirit is moving among you and with you and between you, bringing life, bringing hope, bringing love, and bringing joy. And may that peace, love, hope, life, and joy be with you and remain with you this day and every day. Amen. Whew. Yeah. Feel the joy. Feel the joy, but know where it comes from. And you'll never, ever, ever have a moment without it. Or you'll have moments of sadness. Oh, yeah. You'll still have sadness. You'll still grieve. You'll still have times of pain and hurt and sorrow and fear and anxiety. You'll still have them. But joy will be in there with you somewhere. And that's why it's important we remember that it's not happiness, it's joy. And that joy comes from the deep, deep life of God's Spirit breathing in you. Grace and peace, my friends, carry that joy with you and share it with others. Go in peace and joy to love and serve this God whose name is love. Amen. Until the next episode, peace be with you. Bye for now.